Correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, was at the site of one of the latest Israeli attacks and files this report. Watch.
The Israeli Air Force has struck again in the southern suburbs of Beirut, and once, as usually is the case, we're looking at total destruction of residential buildings and housing complexes. What you're looking at right now is the rooftop of one of the buildings that was completely taken down. The image is apocalyptic. You're looking at what seems to be an abyss of total destruction and smoke still coming out from these buildings as a result of the Israeli rockets, which up until now, experts are saying could include illegitimate bombs. This road was one of the busiest roads in the southern suburbs of Beirut. Of course, you can see that this road includes shops. This is men's clothes shops. We had a supermarket just beside these shops, in addition to the fact that these are areas where there are only civilians staying. Even this one of these buildings here used to be a school as well. This is very close also to one of the television stations in the southern suburbs of Beirut. This is one of the main streets in the southern suburbs of Beirut. We have one of the main Husayniyas and the mosques at the end of the road. This is where people used to close the roads down, usually in the Ashura processions, give votive food out. People would be crowded in this area. Of course, this is definitely a civilian site. What we're looking at, the destruction that you see, the fact that many of these buildings have been taken down to rubble, it's incomprehensible. It's very difficult to understand why the Israelis have chosen. Every other week, they choose one neighborhood, take down these buildings and destroy them almost completely. This seems to be clear that this is a direct attack against the people of the resistance, those who have strong support for the resistance, and Palestine. From the southern suburbs of Beirut, Mariam Saleh.
Cultural and scientific agency UNESCO has announced that it will consider enhanced protection of ancient sites in Lebanon. The announcement followed an appeal by more than 100 Lebanese lawmakers after a wave of Israeli airstrikes that barely missed cultural heritage sites.
Today is a sad day for Baalbek after the airstrikes and brutal attacks by the Israeli enemy targeted the city and targeted the historical areas in it. The building that was targeted today is over 250 years old from the Ottoman era, in addition to Palmyra Hotel, which is part of Baalbek's history. We are waiting for the report by UNESCO and the General Directorate of Antiquities to evaluate the damage, since the building that was targeted is in the middle between Palmyra Hotel and Baalbek Temple. Today I send a message to every international organization to protect Baalbek City, its people, and its heritage.
The lawmakers urge UNESCO to ensure the preservation of heritage sites in areas heavily bombed by Israel during its aggression against the country. UNESCO said it would hold an extraordinary session in Paris on November the 18th to consider giving heritage sites high-level protection from military attacks. It warned that that criminal prosecutions and sanctions may apply in cases where the enhanced protection granted to a cultural property is not respected. Lebanon is home to six UNESCO World Heritage sites, including Roman ruins in Baalbek and Tyre. During recent weeks, several Israeli strikes have hit close to those sites, damaging a number of them. Iranians have once again come together in the capital, Tehran, to donate gold, money, and essential items in a heartfelt show of support for the people of Lebanon and Gaza amid the ongoing Israeli aggression. We have talked to some of them. Let's see what they had to say.
We can't stay indifferent to what's happening around us. Together, from preschool through 12th grade, we're all doing our part to show that we're not turning a blind eye to the tragedies in Lebanon and Gaza. Everyone is contributing in whatever way they can so we can make a positive impact.
My message to the mothers of Gaza and Lebanon is this: all of us Iranian mothers are here for you, caring for you and your children, praying for them, and feeling your pain deeply.
We shouldn't only introduce our children to the idea of resistance through news, books, articles, or notes. Real-world experience with the spirit of resistance can be a powerful influence for them. In my view, this is a great way for them to develop responsibility toward others and engage with the world around them in a way that's aligned with their values, ethics, and faith.
We, the students of the Solha Educational Complex,
came together to start a campaign to raise funds for the people of Palestine. We're selling items, like gold and barely used clothes, at low prices.
I was a soldier in the Iran-Iraq war from beginning to end. When packages arrived with personal notes, it gave us a glimmer of hope despite the hardships of the front lines. We tell ourselves that, as we fought, there was a strong network of support behind us. I recently saw on TV a child in Gaza receiving a similar package from children in Iran, and he was so overjoyed, knowing he wasn't alone.
I imagine myself as a mother in Lebanon or Gaza, hoping others won't ignore my cries for help and will stand with me and my children. We understand what they're going through and won't leave them unsupported.
These types of efforts are spreading across our country, and the youth of Iran continue to stand at the forefront in the fight against oppression. While foreign powers once held sway in our own country, today they're confronting the people of Lebanon. Through this marketplace, we aim to create a lively atmosphere where we could do our part to ease the suffering of the oppressed in Lebanon and Palestine.
More Palestinian civilians are falling victim to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza as the Tel Aviv regime continues with its relentless attacks across the blockaded territory. In one of the deadliest strikes, nearly a dozen civilians were killed after a residential building was bombed in the Al-Doraj neighborhood of Gaza City to the south. Fatalities were reported in Israeli bombing of a home in Al-Tahila neighborhood near Khan Yunis. Northern Gaza was also the scene of deadly attacks where dozens of fatalities were reported in strikes on various areas. The north has been the focus of Israel's attacks for more than a month now. The regime has imposed a siege on the area, worsening the already dire humanitarian situation there. According to Gaza officials, some 80,000 people are trapped in the north amid a complete lack of food and medicine. The genocide in Gaza has claimed the lives of over 43,400 people so far, leaving more than 102,500 others injured. Gaza correspondent Muti Abu Musab earlier joined us to give the latest on Israel's repeated attacks on densely populated refugee camps and areas around them in Gaza. Let's take a listen.
More Palestinian people fell victim and slaughtered after the Israeli occupation forces committed several appalling massacres against the Palestinian people. The fresh one has just been perpetrated against the displaced people taking shelter in a Nasser school in the central area of Gaza City, whereas at least four Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed as an initial outcome. More Palestinian civilians are still believed missing under the rubble of that destroyed building, which was targeted by the Israeli warplanes over the past couple of moments. And as you know, this attack took place hours after the Israeli occupation forces committed several appalling massacres against the Palestinian people, particularly in Ashhaber school, which is still another, as you know, school taking shelter by the Palestinian people in a Shara refugee camp when the Israeli warplanes targeted that school point blank, killing at least 12 Palestinian civilians. An entire Palestinian family was completely erased from the civil registry, joining hundreds of the Palestinian families that were completely targeted and killed by the Israeli occupation forces. Massive destruction unfolded in the building that was targeted by the Israeli warplanes in that school, and horrific scenes unfolded after the videos captured the moments of the Palestinian people being stuck and trapped under the rubble.
Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids into the West Bank and abducted the scores of the residents. The regime's violence and deadly raids in the occupied territory has multiplied over the past months, concurrent with the genocide in Gaza. Earlier, our correspondent Naga Hamid gave us more details on the developments in the West Bank.
Well, after hours of raiding Tul Kerem and Jenin and Nablus for 2 days now, the IOF announced that they will be withdrawing from Tul Kerem and its refugee camp, leaving behind a very big destruction in the infrastructure of the city. More than four Palestinians were martyred inside Tul Kerem, besides another four in Jenin and in Jenin area, in Jenin province, which includes Jenin city, refugee camp, and the surrounding villages. hours, just a couple of hours ago, the IOF started withdrawing the vehicle, the military vehicles, and the soldiers started to go back to the borders of Tul Kerem and its refugee camp, leaving the center of the city and the center of the refugee camp. As the IOF announced that they have, as they have said, they have fulfilled the target of this military operation, so this military activity that has been going on for the last 48 hours. But of course, not only Tul Kerem and Jenin were under pressure, under military raids and military pressure. In the West Bank, in total, there was many cities that has been raided since yesterday and throughout the day. We are talking. We are talking also about Tubas. We are talking now about a raid going on in Al Khalil.
Palestinian resistance movements have strongly condemned the Israeli parliament's final approval of a law allowing deportation of Palestinian resistance fighters' family members to Gaza and elsewhere. Hamas called the measure an affirmation of Israel's hostile and racist approach to Palestinian people in all places where they are present. It added that the law violates the most basic standards of human rights and is an example of collective punishment that violates international humanitarian law. The Islamic Jihad also wrapped the legislation, describing it as dangerous and flagrant violation of all international conventions and norms that prohibit collective punishment. It reiterated that the law is aimed at ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population. The Mujahideen movement also condemned the law as another contempt of the international community as well as international norms and conventions by the regime. Yemen's Ansar Allah leader says the United Nations has not only done nothing for Palestine since its occupation, but has even recognized the Israeli regime as a state and given it rights.
Is the United Nations that, how could they recognize a state that is based on killing and rape and crimes, the killing of women and children, the confiscation of lands, the forced displacement of many, the confiscation of their homes, their villages, their lands, their agriculture? They recognized it as a state. The international courts, what have they done? The criminal courts, what have they done? Anything? The organizations that were also established right after the establishment of the Israeli regime. And up until now, they have not done anything for Palestine. On the contrary, they've only been benefiting the Israeli regime. They have given services to the Israeli regime.
During his weekly televised speech, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the international organizations are just a part of the Western hegemony. He also blasted Arab and Muslim countries for their inaction in the face of Israeli crimes in Gaza. Houthi said that the genocide in Gaza would move anyone that has a conscience, but there is no humanity or ethics left in the Arab regimes. The Yemeni leader also mentioned the U.S. elections and said the region has already experienced Trump's presidency, and we know he's only after making money. Houthi once again pledged that Yemen will continue to support Palestinian and Lebanese resistance against Israeli aggression. Pakistan and Tehran have pledged to further enhance their bilateral relations in the fields of defense and security, with a focus on protecting their shared borders and addressing mutual security concerns. Nasser Kazmi brings us more in this report.
Iran's deputy defense minister pays a two-day official visit to Islamabad. He has met with top Pakistani officials to explore avenues for deepening military and security ties. The visiting Iranian defense official emphasized the importance of strengthening bilateral coordination to effectively secure the porous border with Pakistan, a critical priority for both nations due to their shared security challenges, while assuring Tehran of its full support to increase collaboration on regional peace and security. Islamabad expressed serious concerns over Israel's recent military aggression against Iran, describing it as a violation of international law and an infringement on Iran's sovereignty. to bolster defense, industrial, and technological cooperation with Pakistan. Iran will participate in the International Defense Exhibition, scheduled to be held next week in Karachi.
The shared resolve between Tehran and Islamabad to fortify their defense and security partnership is expected to play a key role in advancing regional stability and sustainable development. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
The Gaza Strip has become a testing laboratory for ammunition suppliers and manufacturers. SIPRI estimates that in the 5-year period 2019 to 2023, the Zionist regime was the world's 15th largest importer of major arms, accounting for 2.1% of global arms imports in the period. Although only three countries were major suppliers of arms to Israel, between that period, the United States, Germany, and Italy, many others supplied military components, ammunition, or services. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Crescent International Road, October 7 marks 1 year of the genocide in Gaza. According to Gaza's government media office, Israeli forces have killed at least 41,870 people, including at least 17,000 children and 11,487 women since October 7, 2023. The British medical journal Lancet, in a study published on July 7, 2024, put the death toll at over 186,000. Even if we take the lower death figure of 41,870, approximately 17,000 children and 11,500 women have been martyred. Thousands of bodies remain trapped under the rubble and are certainly dead. The number of wounded stands at 96,210, of whom 69% are women and children. The Zionist regime has also targeted newborn babies. At least 171 newborn babies and 710 infants under the age of one have been killed by Israeli regime forces. The Zionists have also targeted journalists, killing 174 of them with the specific aim of preventing news of the ongoing genocide from being reported in detail to the outside world. Many children have succumbed to starvation. Over 2 million Palestinians have been displaced multiple times within the Gaza Strip, as all routes to the outside world are blocked. To date, 130 mass graves have been discovered. An estimated 9,500 prisoners in Israeli regime jails are subjected to inhumane and degrading treatment, including torture and rape. The extent of infrastructure damage in the Gaza Strip is staggering. Nearly 80% of buildings in Gaza are either completely or partially destroyed, rendering them uninhabitable. More than 90 schools and all universities have been destroyed. An estimated 516,000 residential units have been either fully or partially destroyed. The war has resulted in damage or the destruction of nearly two-thirds of homes in Gaza, alongside a devastating impact on 84% of health facilities. This destruction stems from over 45,000 missiles and bombs dropped by Israel, totaling approximately 85,000 tons of explosives, more than six times the amount used in the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. The destruction has resulted in an estimated 26 million tons of debris and rubble. Assessments indicate that the damage is at least $18.5 billion, as reported by the Arab Center for Washington, D.C. The report also notes that of the 45,000 bombs dropped on Gaza, approximately 9% to 14% are unexploded. In early May 2024, the United Nations Mine Action Service, UNMAS, estimated that it would take at least 14 years to clear Gaza of explosive remnants of war. Additionally, a Reuters report of May 2nd highlighted that rebuilding Gaza's shattered homes could take until at least 2040, with the possibility of the process extending for many decades, as mentioned in the UN report. However, while addressing the U.S. Congress on July 24, 2024, Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stated, "The day after we defeat Hamas, a new Gaza can emerge. My vision for that day is of a demilitarized and de-radicalized Gaza. Israel does not seek to resettle Gaza." The Gaza Strip has become a testing laboratory for ammunition suppliers and manufacturers. SIPRI estimates that in the five-year period between 2019 to 2023, the Zionist regime was the world's 15th largest importer of major arms, accounting for 2.1% of global arms imports in the period. Although only three countries were major suppliers of arms to Israel, in 2019 to 2023, the United States, Germany, and Italy, many others supplied military components, ammunition, or services. The U.S. has been by far the biggest supplier of weapons to Israel, accounting for 69% of the Zionist regime's arms imports. As of June 28, the Biden regime has sent a significant amount of munitions to Israel since October of last year, including at least 14,000 MK-84 2,000-pound bombs, 6,500 bombs weighing 500 pounds, 3,000 Hellfire precision-guided air-to-ground missiles, 1,000 bunker buster bombs, and 2,600 air-dropped small-diameter bombs, among other munitions reported by Reuters. There are also reports that white phosphorus has been used as a chemical weapon, which is restricted under international humanitarian law. The Zionist regime has already expanded the war beyond Palestine to neighboring countries, which could be a precursor to another global conflict. This heralds a precarious future as the world stands on the brink of catastrophic destruction. It has now become essential to reconsider the framework of international relations in accordance with human dignity, justice, and ethics. New rules of war need to be established along with a practical method to enforce them. Global laws can no longer be under the influence of human predators who have endangered the very foundation of humanity. While economic imbalance, poverty, and environmental issues are undoubtedly important, the immediate and foremost priority in the current situation is the protection of humanity and human beings. Countries must now take decisive action. Failures to do so will lead to the law of the jungle, engulfing everyone, resulting in a devastating future for all. All countries must commit to a new international organization grounded in principles of justice, morality, and humanity, rather than based on economic superiority, race, color, or geography. If the United Nations is to be retained, it must be reconstructed to reflect these foundational values. Now is the time to act. It is everyone's responsibility to recognize the urgency of the moment. It is now or never. This critical turning point in history has become a matter of life and death for the overwhelming majority in the world. It can only be addressed through a unified strategy and action.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and my two guests, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Thank you very much for coming here, and assalamu alaikum to you, Sayyid Abdullah, let me start with you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome, and Brother Yasser, salam to you too.
Alaikum salam, Brother Muhammad Jawad, always a pleasure to be with you.
You're welcome. And one of those movies that we want to, in fact, start criticizing, rather religiously speaking, of course, not artistically, you know, is The First Omen. Actually, it's very much different, that from the Omen series, although it's a kind of improvement on it. This is a rather new movie. It was produced in 2024, directed by Akasha Stevenson. You know, featuring these actors and actresses such as Nell Tiger-Free, Mariah Caballero, Nicole Soros, Ralph Innocent, just to name a few. A woman starts to question her own faith when she uncovers a terrifying conspiracy to bring about the birth of evil incarnate in Rome. Very interesting move. Well, IMDb actually gives this, you know, movie, The First Omen, 6.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomato, 82%. Film Affinity, 6 out of 10. And the box office for this movie was $53.9 million. Let's take a listen to this movie, of course, through a trailer of this movie, The First Omen, produced in 2024. Directed by Akasha Stevenson, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, on RIB English Radio.
You don't have to be afraid. This child is his way.
Back to the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie The First Omen, produced in 2024, directed by Akasha Stevenson. Sayyid Abdullah, let me start with you in this episode. How does this movie, I mean The First Omen, pay homage to the original Omen movie or series, basically?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, I mean, this is not a... It's a prequel, as they call it.
Yes.
A prequel to the First Omen. It's just... It conveys the same story, basically. They're trying to bring the Antichrist. Nothing new there. Pretty much same characters, same names. Mm-hmm. It's just they brought it in a different... like, into more of a modern... technology kind of thing. So if you look at the old Omens, they were quite old, even in terms of color, choreography, I don't know, whatever they want to call it these days, in terms of cinematic
features.
Features. So now it's been done with more, they had like more CGI stuff happening, the colors and everything else. They can do more. And I think that's, they're just trying to kickstart the entire series back again with all the advances they have in terms of cinematic capabilities. So this is being, the name gives it away, being the First Omen, is that they're trying to go back to the beginning.
I see.
And tell you exactly what happened and how everything happened. And then obviously the series will take...
Yeah, how did you like the movie, especially in comparison with the Omen series?
I like the old ones much better.
Uh-huh.
The old ones were much, they had much more suspense.
I see.
I don't know, maybe it's the black and white kind of feel to it or the old feel to
or
it.
Or maybe you are desensitized actually to such movies like with the scary movies.
Maybe,
you know?
Maybe that is quite a good possibility yeah. because we got so much sick of watching all these movies. It doesn't make sense anymore. We're not tasting it anymore. So the old ones
makes more
sense.
Yeah.
And even like the style of the movie, the music they have, back in the day was, even though it wasn't much like dramatic and action-wise captivating as now, but it has a bit of suspense to it. As if you can tell what's going to happen. That's the problem.
Okay. Brother Yasser, what are some of the supernatural elements in this movie? I mean, the first Omen.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So one of the supernatural things also we can actually maybe take out from this movie is the concept of these true visions.
Mm.
And these true visions, not to say that we don't believe in them, but also, you know, we have this thing in the Islamic, especially within the concept of Islamic mysticism, what is known as khawatir. Khawatir are of three types. You have a khawatir that is divine, one that is neutral, meaning it comes from yourself, it has no value as per se. And then you have one that is demonic, satanic.
Would you please define actually or translate khawatir? Because I know that it's very much different from thought.
No, it's very different. Yeah. So khawatir basically it comes from the word khatara, which in here it doesn't just mean thought. It doesn't mean memory. It doesn't mean memory.
Yeah.
It means something that has been implanted in you from an outside source.
Yeah. Or you're inspired by it.
It's inspiration, but it's, for example, it's either a divine inspiration. Mm-hmm. Again, a very different inspiration because when it happens is also important.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it happens during sleep. Sometimes it happens when you're awake. It depends on the state of the person who's having this particular feeling or this inspiration. Again, the English doesn't do justice to what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So here, for example, one of those things, and like I said, sometimes you see that there's a lot of truth in some of these movies.
Mm.
I mean, even because of religious things and amongst the religious sects and even religions in general, there are a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And well, there is a reason for it, saying come from one truth, so to speak.
Exactly.
But here, for example, when it comes to these visions and these particular foretellings that something will happen or something will happen or you will be able to do something, not to do with deja vu also, like this is something true that will happen later on, right? It's not like, you know, I think I've seen it. No, it's something that an outside source, whatever the outside source may be, is implanting something within you to show you something that's going to happen.
Yes.
So this is one of the things, for example, that is shown in the movie. Another one, for example, is obviously, we know, is our good friend Satan, the devil, Lucifer, many other names that you can call him. Is always there in all of these movies.
Yes.
But it's also a truth, though, again.
Yeah.
It's a truth that in all religions, this concept of light and dark, good and evil, is always there.
All of them appear and reappear. You know.
Yeah, it's always there, right? And it's something that is so ingrained within human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Why that is a different discussion altogether. But, for example, this thing of evil, of this pushing away light, of trying to bring down God's law to take down those who are believing in God is something that has always been there. Will always be there. Till the day of judgment, it will be there. And all religions in different forms, different structures and stuff will be represented by it.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
The man you are looking for, the U.S. ambassador to Rome, he will be the new father. He and his wife will suffer a tragic loss and be in need of a child. The boy will inherit their privilege and power. Soon, his darkness will spread, and the world shall be saved.
Back to the program, Viewpoints, the Movie Critic Program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad Hosni's program, and my guest speakers, Abdullah and Brother Yasser, helping me criticize the movie The First Omen, produced in 2024, directed by Arkasha Stevenson. Said Abdullah, what are some of the themes explored in The First Omen?
Well, to begin with, there is the battle of good and evil, dark and light, Satan and God, I guess, the Jesus and the Antichrist. See, these are the themes. Morality against, what's the verses of morality?
Immorality.
Immorality. Yeah. So these are the themes that have been explored because in trying to bring the Antichrist, you always have this moral dilemma of whether it is right or wrong.
Yes.
Or even whether the means justify the goal or the goal justify the means. Because they're trying to bring the Antichrist in the most of horrendous a moral way just so they can bring people back to God.
Yes.
So these are the concepts that this movie touches upon, whether morally, what do we stand? Because I think this, even from an Islamic perspective, I remember there's a group in Iraq, they've done the exact same thing, where they're trying to create a lot of corruption. They were trying to get people to create corruption. And when they asked why, they said, we're trying to bring Imam Zaman. Because he only comes when there's corruption.
Yes. Do you think that this movie in particular, in fact, did justice to these themes, like the battle between good and evil, the power of faith, or whatever, the nature of evil, or Antichrist?
I don't think it done enough, because back in the day, the previous ones, they were more mainly focused on the Antichrist and bringing the Antichrist.
Right.
So this is like, it had that dark theme in it, trying to have that figure come back to life. With this one, they kind of lost it a little bit. I think they were
confused, I guess.
No, just confused. I think, from my personal opinion, I don't know, like when watching this movie, there was like a lot of hints of like sexuality in it, like it's very sexualized. So the whole thing revolves around a woman having to get pregnant. I don't know, it turned out at the end of the day it was the jackal that was sleeping with her, right? Which is an animal. So it had very sexual like imagery, very sexual thoughts, and very sexual visions.
I see.
So it didn't do justice to the old ones.
Yeah, exactly, Brother Yasser. One of the major, in fact, concepts or themes in this movie was Antichrist, right? So what is it? I mean, what is Antichrist?
Look, we have this again. Going back to the biggest conundrum we have in this world of light and dark and good and evil. So with light, there must be an absolute representation of what that light is. So in Christendom, we have obviously the light of Jesus, Isa alayhi salam, the Son of God, who sacrificed everything so that man can be saved. Therefore, on the other side, which is obviously the dark and the evil, you must have an absolute representation of what that thing is, which obviously therefore is the Antichrist, which is a particular being that manifests absolute corruption and darkness. That whatever it does, it will make a human being, or whatever it is, follow it, become completely corrupt and take it to the depths of hell. Basically, he wants to bring hell on earth. Whereas Jesus wants to bring heaven on earth.
Yes.
He wants to bring hell on earth. So that's the thing. We have this also in Islamic
eschatology
and normal Islamic mysticism and so on and so forth, with the concept of Dajjal, that a person again will come in order to deceive people. And this is again a test for all of us, not only, you know, the Christians. Every single individual at that time will have a test of faith.
Yes.
Like, would you this magic, or magic again in inverted commas,
Do we look at the same concept? Do we look at the same entity when we speak about Antichrist, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim?
It could be similar, but again, the words may just be a different word. But again, it may represent the same thing.
I see.
That the Antichrist or Dajjal is representing that particular darkness, that particular evil. Whereas, for example, in Islam, we may say, okay, that particular light at that time will be the final Imam, Imam al-Zaman. Ajallallahu ta'ala farajhum sharif, may Allah hasten his reappearance. Whereas in Christian theology, at this particular moment in time, even then, Jesus will still be the representation of that light.
True. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the Movie Critic Program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticized the movie The First Omen, produced in 2024, directed by Akasha Stevenson. Of course, we haven't finished it, and inshallah, we'll do so in the upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Limelight.
Several UN agencies and other international aid organizations have warned of the grave consequences of the massive military operation and tight siege imposed by the Zionist regime in northern Gaza for over 3 weeks. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, top UN officials warned in a statement that Palestinians are at risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence. United Nations agencies described the situation in northern Gaza as apocalyptic. Amid a bloody Zionist regime military aggression and siege for over 3 weeks, Reuters news agency reported. The heads of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the World Food Programme, WFP, among other humanitarian aid organizations, issued a statement warning of the looming risk of death of the entire population in northern Gaza. The statement said, as quoted by Reuters, the entire Palestinian population in North Gaza is at imminent risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence. The UN officials voiced in their statement frustration over the Zionist regime's blockade of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip, despite the dire need. They said humanitarian aid cannot keep up with the scale of the needs due to the access constraints. Basic life-saving goods are not available. The UN officials further slammed the constraints imposed by the Zionist occupation authorities on humanitarian aid agencies and workers. They added, humanitarians are not safe to do their work and are blocked by Israeli forces and by insecurity from reaching people in need. The Zionist UN mission in New York reportedly declined to comment on the statement by the top UN officials. Reuters also reported that the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, administrator Samantha Power spoke recently with Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Michael Herzog, regarding the devastating humanitarian situation in the besieged enclave, adding that Power raised serious concern on the humanitarian conditions in North Gaza. USAID spokesperson Benjamin Sorato said that Power and Herzog discussed the need to get more aid to the Palestinian people. Several UN agencies and other international aid organizations have warned of the grave consequences of the massive military operation and tight siege imposed by the Zionist regime in North Gaza for over 3 weeks. The Palestinian Civil Emergency Service in Gaza announced recently that over 100,000 people are stranded in Jabalia, Beit Lahia, and Beit Hanun in North Gaza, deprived of food, water, and medicine. Along this line, the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, Euromed, warned recently that 400,000 Palestinians will be starved to death if they are not killed by the Zionist occupation forces' relentless military operation in northern Gaza. The rights group said in a statement that Israel's obstruction of aid entry to the north for the last several weeks, along with the massive military operation it is carrying out in the area, have not only placed the Palestinians at high risk of being killed by bombardment, but also at starving the population to death. The statement read, "Due to the ongoing Israeli siege, about 200,000 Palestinians in the northern Gaza governorate have been without food or drinking water for 10 full days now." In parallel, Save the Children said on October 14th that Gaza is what can happen without the rules of war, slamming world powers for continuing to send arms to Israel that are being used to kill children and burn patients and families in hospitals and tents. Jeremy Stoner, the West Asia region director for Save the Children, said in a statement, "Humanity has lost its way if those with the liability and legal obligation to stop this slaughter choose not to. What we are seeing now in Gaza looks like the depth of hell, with reports day after day of attacks on children and families. Nowhere is safe," Stoner said of the situation in the Gaza Strip. Flouting a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, the Zionist regime has faced international condemnation amid its continued brutal offensive on Gaza. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians, the Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7, 2023. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 43,259 Palestinians have been martyred and at least 101,827 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, starting on October 7, 2023. Moreover, at least 11,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those martyred and wounded are women and children. The Zionist regime war has resulted in an acute famine, mostly in northern Gaza, resulting in the death of many Palestinians, mostly children. The Zionist regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt, in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Later in the war, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians began moving from the south to central Gaza in a constant search for safety.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Targets two important Israeli military bases with missiles during new retaliatory operations in response to the regime's aggression against Lebanon. Israel's indiscriminate strikes kill more women and children across Gaza, raising the genocidal war's death toll to over 43,400. Also coming up, Palestinian groups strongly condemn Israel's new law that allows the expulsion of resistance fighters' families as part of the regime's ethnic cleansing war. Hello and welcome your world news. The Hezbollah resistance movement continues its retaliatory operations against Israel, targeting the regime's major military bases and settlements deep inside the occupied territories. In one of its latest operations, Hezbollah targeted the regime's Stella Maris naval base, northwest of Haifa, with rockets. The base plays a crucial role in Israeli army's naval monitoring and control operations. The Elik Akim base, south of Haifa, was also hit with missile barrages. The group said its rocket salvos hit the settlements of Menara, Kiryat Shimona, and Krayat, north of Haifa. Hezbollah fighters also ambushed an Israeli infantry force, which was trying to advance towards the town of Yarun, killing and wounding a number of its members. The movement also targeted gatherings of Israeli soldiers in a number of settlements, including Sar, Shumera, Yifta, and Doviv, with barrages of rockets. Israeli air and artillery strikes cause more death and destruction in Lebanon as the regime presses ahead with its aggression against the Arab country. At least three civilians were killed and seven others injured after an Israeli drone strike targeted a vehicle in the southern city of Sidun. The UN said there were at least five Malaysian peacekeepers among those injured. The raid in which the UN peacekeepers were wounded struck near an army checkpoint, leaving three Lebanese soldiers injured as well. In a separate airstrike on a building in the southern city of Zebdin, three family members lost their lives, while another strike on western Bekaa left three dead and four injured. Altogether, 13 civilians were killed in Israel's Thursday attacks, bringing the death toll from the regime's strikes since last October to over 3,100. More than 13,800 others have also been injured. Israel continues with its brutal attacks across Lebanon, with civilian areas and infrastructure among the main targets of the regime's attacks. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, was at the site of one of the latest Israeli attacks and files this report. Watch.
The Israeli Air Force has struck again in the